Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
Hello and welcome to the fourth constituency debate programme, which today features the four candidates standing in Douglas North. Over the course of the next hour, they're going to talk about their policies, thoughts and views, which they hope will win your vote in exactly 3 weeks' time. We'll hear from the candidates in just a moment, but first, Dan Walker takes us on a tour of the constituency.
Vikings left their marks on Douglas North many years ago. Castle Ward is just one relic of those more violent times. They also, if street signs are to be believed, were prolific builders of modern housing estates. In Governors Hill alone, there are streets named for Godred Crovan, Olaf the Red and Ragnald Haraldsson, all ancient kings of Man. If the Viking Pass gives the impression of a warlike heritage, the location of both the island's police headquarters and, until recently, the prison in the constituency do little to dispel the image. Jerby now has the dubious distinction of hosting the prison, but politicians from other constituencies may well look at North Douglas as somewhere with forthright views and a formidable electorate. Indeed, one of the constituency's former MHKs had a very close relationship with the prison, having served a term there before he got to sit in the Keys. Samuel Norris, a noted journalist and reformer, was imprisoned during the First World War for obstructing a coroner attempting to enforce rape charges on Douglas boarding house landladies ruined by the collapse of the tourist trade. Norris emerged from his sentence a national hero, and in the 1919 election, his stint in the clink obviously didn't harm his chances with the denizens of Douglas North as he swept home at the top of the poll. If you wish to see Norris's old stamping ground, you may like to make the journey to the constituency by public transport, and you will find it is well served by a bus timetable, or not, depending on your point of view. In the last few years, no issue has so dominated the headlines in the constituency as the so-called decimation of its Willesden heartland by those who plan the routes for the public transport services. A major overhaul of the existing timetable in September 2010 met with outcry from some of the good folks of the constituency. There were even calls for a minister's resignation. The Viking inhabitants of yesteryear would, no doubt, have thought such shenanigans unnecessary and called, literally, for a head on a plate. What happens with that is anyone's guess at this stage, but let's hope the voters don't miss the bus on polling day.
Dan Walker with some thoughts on the constituency of North Douglas. Well, now let's meet the candidates. They are Theo Flerby, a hotelier who's standing as an independent, Bill Henderson, the sitting member aiming to regain his seat, again, not affiliated to any party, John Horton, who's been a North Douglas MHK since 1996 and is also hoping to regain his seat, another independent candidate, and Peter Hill, who's standing as a member of the Liberal Vannin Party. Well, each candidate will now have up to 2 minutes to speak uninterrupted about whatever they choose, and that will be done alphabetically. So let's start with Theo Flerby.
Thanks, Beth. Good evening. My name is Theo Flerby. I'm 53 and originally from Holland. 13 years ago, my family and I moved to the Isle of Man, where I established myself as a hotelier in Douglas North. We love the Isle of Man. I've lived and worked in a number of countries, but the Isle of Man is a fantastic place to live, work and raise a family. We've built up our business here, and for many years life has been good. And the Isle of Man has prospered. However, the last few years, things started to turn sour. The Isle of Man was and is still confronted with many major issues that have been dealt with very poorly, to say the least, by our chosen representatives. Our quality of life is threatened due to the lack of foresight, the bad management and the poor leadership shown by those people that you and I voted for 5 years ago. They've let us down badly. They spend money, your money, like there was no tomorrow. And now tomorrow is here, the kitty is empty and things are looking bad. We now have hundreds of millions of pounds less to spend on our schools, our healthcare, our housing and all the things important to us. Those you trusted with your vote 5 years ago have shown to be out of their depth with the issues that are now threatening our economy and with that our way of life. People of Douglas North, people of the Isle of Man, I think you deserve better. If we allow the same people to get back into the House of Keys, matters will go from bad to worse. It's now time for change. We need a new House of Keys, and it's time to elect MHKs that are used to dealing with the daily challenges of running a business through good and, even more important, through bad times. New MHKs with business experience. New MHKs that are streetwise and know how to deal with the difficult issues facing us. MHKs who can hold their ground in dealing with the outside world on an international level. I'm convinced that with a new House of Keys we will be able to turn things around and preserve the high quality of life that we all have come to enjoy. Out with the old, in with the new, because you, people of Douglas North, people of the Isle of Man, deserve better.
Theo Flowby, thank you. Now let's turn to Bill Henderson.
First to my Beth and to our audience. I was born and grew up in North Douglas. It has been my home. I believe this Council of Ministers and any future government must connect directly with every sector of the community. I believe government has shifted its focus away from the ordinary people of this island. Instead, it is devoting far too much of its attention to its image, concentrating on how it is perceived by others, and in particular, the UK and those heading major businesses. We need a government that is open and honest and gives the facts in detail to the community. We need a Tynwald and a government of robust individuals, loyal first and foremost to the House of Keys oath, with the courage to stand firm in the face of challenges, a government that does not pander to outside influences, but be they from the UK, Europe or further afield. Simply put, we should never bow to external pressures. The island needs MHKs who have the courage of their convictions, perceived not as nodding donkeys, but as people with moral fibre to make waves and challenge the status quo whenever necessary. People willing to stand up in Tynwald and say what needs to be said, and committed to making the difference we need. Politicians stalwart enough not to flinch from losing favour with each other over what matters, but strong and confident to work together in the interests of this island at a time when we face such grave challenges. I, for one, fully subscribe to this approach. We must rid ourselves of current stigmas and work towards restoring pride in ourselves, in Tynwald, our island, and in all the special qualities that make us the successful nation we have become. If re-elected, I pledge to work towards these goals. I am passionate that our community should once again feel a sense of national pride. I have a proven track record and have undertaken my duties fearlessly, and I fully intend to deliver the same service to my constituents and people of this island again if re-elected.
Bill Henderson, thank you. Now let's turn to Peter Hill.
Good evening, Beth. Good evening, listeners. My name's Peter Hill. I'm representing the Liberal Vannon Party in Douglas North. The party has given the people of Douglas North the opportunity to seek change if that is what they wish. As an individual, my background essentially was in the private sector in the UK, where I was involved in design and budgeting for a significant box company at that time. I then moved into the private security industry, where again I was responsible for budgeting and saving money, which I'm glad to say I did. I didn't benefit from it, somebody else did, but there you go. And then I joined the Metropolitan Police, and I spent 25 very interesting years there, being shot at and blown up and all the other things, and having petrol bombs and scaffolding poles thrown at me. It was really good. My main function there, though, was prosecution work, which was interesting. You met all sorts of people. Having retired, I then moved back to the Isle of Man. I had relatives here, and got involved in Manx National Heritage, where I worked there for free. In fact, I'm a longest-serving employee in one aspect. I then moved into local government, where I've been a clerk to Lonnon, and now I'm the deputy clerk at Laxey Village Commissioners. I'm also the treasurer to the Isle of Man Municipal Association, and I was the secretary to a yacht club. My commitment to the Isle of Man and Douglas North, basically, is to ensure fair governance and make sure that the money that we've got is spent wisely, directed properly. And of course, my first port of call is the people of Douglas North, because they are the people who hopefully will see that I'm an ideal candidate to represent them for the next 5 years. And I'll certainly endeavour to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter Hill. And finally, John Horton.
Thank you, Bess. As the island enters into a period of austerity following the dramatic reduction of revenue from the VAT sharing agreement, we have not been plunged into a recession. The island is in a strong position to withstand such a cut in public sector finance, and government must support the private sector wherever possible in order to maintain local businesses and employment of our people. When government recently decided to transfer most of its printing business, for instance, to the post office, it led to a number of redundancies within a key local printing company. My manifesto will address the key components of a strategy towards effective negotiations for a future VAT sharing agreement with the United Kingdom Treasury, together with the urgent need to foster allies at political and officer level. A crucial requirement will be for professional negotiators to assist in order to ensure the island receives its fair share. In respect of taxation, I would support the proposed implementation of a high-powered commission to advise Tynwald on future taxation initiatives acceptable to the European Code Group. This move would complement the valuable work of the Assessor of Income Tax going forward. Finally, the control of government spending, which has already begun, needs to be carefully considered at each juncture before implementation, but I would strive to maintain health budgets and the promotion of education for the young, which is, of course, of paramount importance to us all. Thank you.
John Horton, thank you. Well, as I said in the introduction, the aim of this programme is to hear the candidates' thoughts, views and intentions as both local MHKs and national politicians. So let's take that local angle first. And I'd like to know from the challenges why they think there needs to be a change in North Douglas, because from the face of it, the partnership between Bill Henderson and John Horton has worked pretty well since 1998. Theo Fleurby, what is it that you believe you can do better for the people of North Douglas?
Well, I disagree with what you just said, Beth, because from knocking doors in the last few weeks, I actually get another message from people that I speak to on their doorstep. The message I'm getting is that everything is a bit too stale and too dusty and too rusty, and a lot of people say it's time for a change, which obviously I totally agree with.
John Horton, too stale and dusty?
Surprise to me, because the reception that I've had at the doors is very, very warm. It's like welcoming back into families going into there. I've had very strong pledges of support. Keep up the good work is what they're saying. They obviously wanted to know what my future policies were. Of course they did. But the support is very, very strong. And we'll await till election day and we'll all find out.
Bill Henderson, the people want a change in North Douglas.
The message I'm getting is loud and clear. Bill, we want you back in. You've done the business before. You've got a proven track record. You've showed us that you stand up. You're not afraid of the Council of Ministers. And we want you and John Horton back in to carry on where you left off.
And it's important that partnership remains in place, do you think?
It's important for the constituency. Obviously, we do at a national level. There's a completely different and separate agenda. But for constituency, it's huge. In any constituency, if there are problems, then obviously you need MHKs that can work together as well as a team.
John the Horton. Proof is in the pudding, I'm afraid, Beth, in that, and Mr. Fleurby will find out when he gets further into the constituencies what regard people have for us in the numbers. And I'm not sure how many.
Well, in the words of one of your constituents, they actually think that the time the Billy and Johnny show is over, literally. That's one of your constituents that told me that 2 days ago.
Peter Hill, can I bring you in here? What's the Liberal Vannon mission as far as North Douglas is concerned?
North Douglas, the Liberal Vannon approach, really, is having knocked on the doors. I've had a conflicting sort of version of events. But overall, there is a demand for change. Some people have spoken very highly of John, and some people have spoken very highly of Bill, and some people have spoken very highly of both of them, because one can't rule out the fact they have served Douglas North for a considerable period. However, sometimes, I mean, Thatcher was in power for 13 years and people got fed up with her. Tony Blair was in power for the same, they got fed up with him. And sometimes people just do want change.
Mistakes and blunders.
So Liberal Vannon...
And blunders have been made as well over the last 5 years of Bill.
So we've put in the work, people have seen the track record, the results are there for them, and it'll be in the manifestos when they come out.
But the results are that we're £200 million down, or what we normally have to spend.
We're talking about local issues at the minute. If you want to spread it up to national issues, that's a completely different
level. But don't you think a loss of £200 million of money that you normally would spend on housing, education, health, people won't feel that?
Of course, but you're mixing it up with local issues where I've just said we've got a proven track record. When we look at £200 million VAT deficit, you're sort of giving the impression to people that somehow the sitting MHKs have voted in favour of that, and the contrary couldn't be more true of that. It was inflicted upon us by the UK, as everyone knows, and now, as Mr. Horton says, we've got to deal with that over the next 5 years in a pragmatic and proper way, and ensure that any cuts and so on and savings are done in a responsible manner that affect the community in the least ways.
And that's a subject we will come to in due course, but I'd just like to stay with the Liberal Vannin mission as far as North Douglas is concerned. And Mr. Hill, why, when you live in Baldrine, are you standing for North Douglas?
I was basically asked to stand in North Douglas, which I'm very happy to do. I've got the necessary skills. I don't think it really... I mean, John Horton doesn't live in Douglas North, and I think you'll find when you look at the general situation regarding MHK's standing, I think you'd be surprised just exactly how many MHKs do not live in the area they're standing in. However, they do have the necessary skills to represent the authority.
So you feel you have a good grip of the issues of North Douglas?
I believe I found out some things I was quite surprised about. I mean, I thought the issue of buses, for one, had been fully resolved, and I find just about everybody I speak to says it hasn't. I thought both John and Bill had secured that. I know everything's a moving feast because you might fix it and then the director of tourism will change it. That can happen, but it's still there.
We brought the matter to Tynwald several times. Minister Cretney categorically, point blank, refused. Now, we did our work for the constituents, which is to represent them. We brought it to Tynwald. We represented the constituents 200% over that. As everyone knows, it was all over the press, the track records there. Minister Cretney went on record and said, as the Minister of the Department, he was not willing to budge, and the ministerial block vote backed him up on that.
So that question's
so
then... That question's then how much power constituency MHKs actually have?
Well, they have quite a lot, because in some ways when you bring a matter, if you have to bring a constituency matter to Tynwald, there's issues such as the compensation I got for the ex-Japanese prisoners of war the other year. That went through and I was fully supported. So you can be successful, or some of the construction issues and road safety issues that have been put in place now, successful.
Let's just talk about manifestos then, because in general I'm really surprised at how late candidates are leaving it to actually produce one. How could you go knocking on doors without having a manifesto setting out what it is you're standing for? Theo Flowby.
Because I was actually advised, because my manifesto was almost done about 3 weeks ago, and I spoke to someone who's already, he's still an MHK, not from this constituency. And he said, no, he says, you haven't knocked enough doors yet. You need to know what's important for people that live in that constituency. So what I've been doing the last few weeks, I've been gathering all those ideas, all those issues that people mentioned to me on the doorstep, and they are going to be incorporated in my manifesto. That's why my manifesto will be a little bit later than I planned.
Bill Henderson, anyone who wants to read your manifesto is going to have to take a couple of days off work. It's huge.
Well, there's plenty in there, and I certainly believe that people should see what a politician or an aspiring politician is all about.
But isn't a manifesto about setting out your stall for the coming administration?
Absolutely.
Not just cutting and pasting bits from Hansard from the previous debates.
There's nothing cutted and pasted in there. There's plenty of detail, and as you'll see from the objectives and the ideas and the results and the review that I've placed out for constituents, it's not just a case of that, Beth. It's a case of showing people what you're about, what you've done and what you hope to achieve, and put in some realistic issues for them.
But who's actually going to read it? It's bogged down with detail.
Well, people want the detail these days. They're telling me on the doors. What people don't want is the takeaway menu flyer that comes through the door that so many we've seen in the past. And all you see is, let's have more police, let's have more teachers. And there's little substance behind it. The manifesto set out in quite a readable fashion. It's got headings in. People can dip in, dip out. And certainly mine's been written for a bit longer than 3 weeks, because I'm in touch with the constituents all the time. I know exactly what they think and feel.
Peter Hill, how much say did you have in your own manifesto?
Sorry, how much?
How much say did you have in producing your own manifesto?
Very little, because it's a party. And unfortunately, I wasn't in the party when the original manifesto was prepared. Having said that, though, I've got a reasonable knowledge of the manifesto, simply because some years ago, two commissioners started who were Liberal Vannin members. As a clerk, it was clearly my duty to know where they were coming from in case it affected the local authority there.
I think people would want you to have more than a little bit of a knowledge of your manifesto.
No, I think I've got a good knowledge of the manifesto. I mean, I've done an awful lot of research when the commissioners join, so I know what their concerns are and what their policy intentions are as such. Obviously, I've had to look at it even more, but of course, sometimes when you're given less time to learn something, you learn it far quicker and in a lot more detail.
John Horton, what's the purpose of your manifesto?
The purpose of my manifesto is to move matters forward, giving very little historical viewpoint, because people know what's happened in the past, apart from just setting out briefly a track record, what bills I've brought forward in respect of government bills and private members' bills, which seem to be forgotten about in these cases. And I could speak more about that later if you wish. But because of this particular circumstance that we're in, people really want to see, right at the horse's mouth, as it were, the points and what your viewpoint is in moving forward with the issues to do with the most important agreement for the island each time it happens, namely the VAT sharing agreement, which comes off the back of the Customs and Excise Agreement, of course, and also other issues, and in this case too, which of course affects government revenue in the main, which is taxation. So I've dealt with those as main issues, and if you like, I've stepped aside from a lot of other issues that I'd like to have put in and put more effort into that.
Well, as you say, I mean, it's undoubtedly the main issue that's hanging over the election, the VAT. The second visit of that negotiation by HM Treasury was announced during the final Timwood sitting. The new arrangement, the tax-based measurement method, was negotiated. But John Horton, you said in the political questionnaire you answered for Manx Radio that the VAT income needed to be carefully negotiated with UK authorities, but that's been done and we are where we are.
Yes, indeed. But don't forget, that's the end of that particular negotiation, but the negotiation can take but the next negotiation can take place possibly within 12 months. No more than 24 months, and we need to be ahead of the game for that.
Well,
so, and before the implementation of it, negotiations commence at a base level in order to agree certain criteria, such as were the GNIs with the local populace as compared to the United Kingdom. And all of those points need to be hammered out at an early level before they work their way up into the main agreement. If you like, there's work takes place on this on a continuing basis, the way
who's
I understand.
Who's going to be negotiating that next round, John?
And that's the point I'm making. It wants to be professionally. Once all
because
the factors
we've failed twice, we've lost the negotiations twice, and that's costing us a lot of money.
And that's the purpose for, I feel, professional negotiations.
Yeah, but if you fail once, okay, but you can't fail twice.
I find that very, very sad.
Bill Henderson.
You're given a slant's been given here that somehow MHKs have been involved in this and we've failed.
Yeah.
The thing of it is, what went on with Treasury officials and the Treasury Minister is a different thing to backbench MHKs. And also, I would draw a line on the word negotiations, because we were quite categorically told by the Treasury Minister that, in fact, a gun was held against the Treasury's head, that if an agreement wasn't reached, the VAT and customs agreement would actually be cut.
It is my understanding, though, that the latest take hasn't actually been signed off yet. It hasn't been.
No, it hasn't.
Hasn't actually been finalised. So they might actually say, forget the last one, we want some more. And we just don't know that at the moment.
John Horton, you say if you're re-elected, you want to be part of a team of Timwood members fostering close relations with counterparts in Westminster. Now, with all due respect, you are known to be quite a feisty, outspoken critic when you don't agree with something. How would delicate political discussions benefit from your style of negotiation?
First and foremost, I've got an awful lot of experience in my past life of fostering good negotiations with people I've met at national level in areas outside government. And it all matters the same. If I have feisty discussions with people at a local level on issues with members in the Keys and so on, that's one thing. But fostering good relations and allies, and I feel we all must get involved in that, whereas in the past it was the council ministers alone that would do that and you'd be kept on the outside.
John, if you had these good relationships, why didn't you put them to good use when we were negotiating the reciprocal health agreement?
Because the reciprocal health agreement was a matter within the Department of Health and was not negotiated. A Comyn report was brought to Timwood.
Our government failed dramatically. You could have stepped in with your good contacts in the UK. It was the people of the Isle of Man in the end who saved the day, using
your contacts
in the UK. You're
forgetting some very important information there, Mr. Flurbe. And certainly, from a backbencher point of view, we did not agree with Tony Brown came to Tynwald in October that year, and he announced that is it. tough. You're going to accept it.
Didn't. Well, I mean, I can actually put some
MPs. MPs across were contacted. The Speaker of the House of Keys led that charge and questions placed in Westminster.
Well, apparently not John Walters' contacts in the UK, as he just mentioned.
No, the contacts are
so good.
You're making an impression that we voted against the health agreement. We did not.
I'm just referring to John's remark with regards to
who shouted in Tynwald to support the Speaker and other movements to get the pressure on in Westminster.
Okay, I would
Phil
say again.
Just misunderstands one point here. I was given an example of people in my past life in that regard and how that should be fostered through all of us, through Tynwald, all Tynwald members, not just the Council of Ministers. So you have a wider span of allies that you can foster, and friendship that you can foster with those, because that helps. That helped with Andrew McKinley and our Speaker, who brought about that change.
OK, well, I would say again that we are where we are. Bill Henderson, in your manifesto, you say a top priority for the new government's going to be address the island's reliance on VAT returns. How?
Yeah, that's right. Well, we've seen the issues that it's caused for now, and senior politicians have agreed with me that really we should have been looking at that issue years ago and weaning ourselves off.
Absolutely.
And I fully support that. Now we're at a position where a statement has been made in Westminster not so long ago, whereby the authorities there believe that we're at a point where what we put in is what we get out now. What I don't want to see is this gun levied against
us. No, absolutely, but how are you going to deal with the island's reliance on VAT?
The issue is that we look at the economy, we grow business, and we renegotiate what we've got with the UK, the reliance factor.
Are the UK interested in renegotiating with us?
They may well be, because we're a thorn in their side at the minute.
That's a big if.
Well, the point is, though, we should be talking to them to see where we are at the minute, because they believe they've given us a deal. What we put in is what we put out, what we get back.
But I think the fact remains, though, with the VAT thing, I think it was transparently obvious. I mean, when I moved here, coming from what I judged to be a poverty-stricken UK, the island was doing very well, and I sort of thought, perhaps ignorantly, how can 80,000 people be so well off? And I actually think it must have been obvious then that the VAT sharing agreement was overly generous towards the island.
Well, Peter Hill, the Liberal Vanning government, or if there was a Liberal Vanning government, it would announce that it's considering abrogating the revenue sharing agreement with the UK. But in reality, despite what people mean very little to the UK. If you start making threats like that, they're just going to tell us to get on with it. How would it make us better off?
They've already told us to get on with it if we want to, so let's get on with it.
Peter Hill.
It's not exactly what Liberal Van is saying. They're saying that what they would do is...
No, that's what it says.
But what they'd actually is look into the question of abrogation to see if it is a worthwhile means. It may be, and it has been put to me, that the amount of VAT that's collected on the Isle of Man could meet demand, and we might actually be better off not having it. And... you've got to look at
your own taxes, you mean.
Yeah. Well, Theo Fleurby, you say the way the new agreement works means any VAT paid off-island means less income for the island. I think that's fairly obvious that's what's happening.
That's wrong, actually.
So your idea is to explore the possibility of the Isle of Man setting its own VAT independent from the UK. Now, the Treasury Minister in Tynwald, when this was announced, said that in the island's immediate and long-term economic interests, it was best served by the continuation of the Customs and Excise Agreement. What makes you think you know better?
I think we should be looking at ways of doing it alone. I think it was John Orme, who was standing in Russian, who actually mentioned on radio here that if now the deal is that we should not receive more from the joint VAT income than when we would be receiving the VAT ourselves, collect the VAT ourselves, then what's the reason then to stick with the UK agreement? You know, John mentioned that there might be ways there where it might be better for us to actually do
that. That's another person's opinion. I mean, how do you believe in practical terms it would work?
Well, it is possible. We can do that. We have to take into account, though, that it's going to be a difficult process and it could be an expensive process.
But it doesn't mean that we shouldn't look into it. And it's not a process we can afford at the moment?
Sorry?
Is it a process that we can afford at the moment?
We have to look at that. There is pros and cons, but we have to look at it because we're in a situation now where I think we should look at the option.
We haven't had the details supplied to us properly at all to make some firm decisions on this. But what I firmly believe in, and I want to pick up on a point you were at earlier, Beth, it does need to be assessed, because if we're at a point now where what we put in is what we get out, so to speak, then a full assessment needs to be made and we need to look at the impact of our own taking our own VAT receipts, and I'm very much in favour of that, because at the minute we can't carry on the way we are, and where we're being instructed, basically, it's a lever held over our head, and if we could remove that lever, that's what I'm about, then we can act more independently, and which is better for business.
I think also, though, that as Bill said, we don't know. Well, the Freedom of Information Act would help, and one doesn't say freedom of information, you say everything, because there are confidential issues that can't be disclosed. But maybe if people were more informed about what was going on, we might then be able to make better judgments.
OK, well, I think that's a good time to take a short break. We'll be back in a couple of moments.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
Welcome back. You're listening to Manx Radio's election constituency debate. Today, the focus is on North Douglas, and I'm joined by the four candidates, Theo Fleurby, Bill Henderson, Peter Hill and John Horton. Peter Hill standing for Liberal Vannin. Let's just turn to manifesto issues. Bill Henderson, I'm going to pick you up on, since yours is the weightiest of the manifestos. It does seem to be somewhat contradictory in places, because you talk about the need for government to rein in savings, but on the other hand, you're critical of the way social care is being forced to make cuts. You talk specifically about the increase in social housing rents. You can't have it all at this point in time. Something has to give.
It's certainly a good argument, Beth, but the fact of the matter is that on the one hand, yes, government have to make savings. They have to look at the scope as well, because we've looked at the structure, and as far as I'm concerned, I voted against that fiasco with the restructuring of government. Why break a working machine in the middle of a crisis, basically? Now, that's one issue. At the same point, you've still got to look after the needy in this community. You've still got to look after the less well-off. You've still got to look after the pensioners.
Well, let's just think about social housing rents. I mean, the housing deficiency in the 2011-12 budget was £7.8 million. So that's the difference between the rent received and the money needed to maintain those properties. That is clearly one area that can be saved by increasing the rents.
Yeah, you can increase the rents and you can make people even worse off than they already are now.
Okay, means test it then.
How hard do you want to hit the less well-off and the needy of the community? That's my message.
Means test
when
it,
you've
then.
Means testing is an easy one to bandy round. What we've got to look at, there's plenty of ideas in my manifesto, such as building further first-time buyer, second-time houses.
But that's all about spending more money that we haven't got.
Well, sometimes you've got to spend to save, and the government have already...
But you want government to rein in the spending.
You've got to do both, Beth. And like we've got at Rearty Shear in North Douglas, we've got 16 new sheltered housing units built, constructed. 16 single people moved from family homes into those units, very happy. 16 units freed up. Now, if you can use a carrot method like that for other housing units, which I'm offering in my manifesto, and buy-to-save initiatives and so on, government mortgages, then we're getting some inroads into the property situation. You can't just hammer the less well-off and say, oh, let's put the rents up. You'll be causing a social crisis.
John Horton, means testing, not necessarily a vote winner, but it makes financial sense, especially at the moment.
Because of the evolution of social housing, we're now many, many incumbents now into social housing are people who are means tested anyway because of their income support. I see it now as less and less an issue, and I support what Bill has said there. If you put the rent up, only their income support will go up. And people now, who are now, as I say, going into social housing, really need social housing. But also, there is a quick supporting route for people in social housing to move on into first-time buyer housing. In fact, they're almost at the top of the list, in order then to allow someone else in a more needy circumstance to go in there.
Theo Fleurby, you want government to work like a private sector business. What does that mean to you in terms of things like social housing and universal benefit?
Well, I would like to see a government which works in a bit more the way that like a business works. I think government is too big. I think we all know that government is too big. There's too many chiefs and not enough Indians. Just to give you an example, I've been sitting in meetings with government departments when I was sitting on one side of the table and there were five people on the other side of the table, and there was a minister, there was a chief executive, there was a director, and there were two managers, and I added up the total wage package. You came close to £500,000.
But what does that mean in terms of what I asked you about social housing and universal benefit?
Social housing, let me just raise that, reply to that issue, because it's an absolute disaster that we have still people waiting for years and years and years on a waiting list to actually get onto property ladder or get into social housing or at least being able to rent a property for themselves. I think we should be looking at ways to unlock all the properties that are empty and not being used and not being put on the rental market.
That's an interesting point, actually, because you say that in your manifesto, you want to persuade property owners to make their empty properties available to tenants. How would you do that?
I think it was Phil Gorne a few years ago. Correct me if I'm wrong, John, here. I think it was Phil Gorne who a few years ago mentioned that there's hundreds of properties empty, not being used. They've been empty for years. If they would come onto the market, that would relieve the waiting list dramatically.
Okay, can I just play devil's advocate here and ask how you think hoteliers would feel about being encouraged to make empty rooms in their hotels available to tenants?
We're talking about long-term, like residential income, not hotel rooms.
Some hotel rooms could be empty long-term.
As a hotelier, I'm not allowed to rent out rooms for longer than 28 days. So that's a different kettle of fish. So we can't talk about that. That would be breaking the rules. Besides, I'm not talking about renting rooms. I'm talking about apartments, houses.
No, absolutely, but we're talking about a need, and maybe these rules need to be changed.
Yeah, I don't think we should be talking about looking at converting hotel rooms to rooms for long-term lets. Obviously, a hotel room doesn't lend itself for a long-term tenant to stay there. We should be looking at making those properties available that are empty, and there's hundreds of them.
Bill Henderson.
I put an empty properties initiative to Tynwald about 5 or 6 years ago. It wasn't an expensive initiative, it was one that was carried, and it caused the Department of Local Government and Environment at that time to engage somebody to assist in a property assessment round the Isle of Man. It included all the local authorities, which we were very conscious at the time. There was a lot of local authority housing stock lying empty for months on end. And it actually caused a bringing together of people, and it brought down the waiting times of empty houses. And I've put that in my manifesto as a possible one strand of a solution anyway to speed things up. As Mr. Fleurbay says, there are empty properties around and they could be looked at.
Peter Hill, what does Liberal Vannin suggest will sort out the housing issue?
I think what their drive is really is to encourage people to move on from social housing. I know John sort of mentioned that, and it is one of their policies to assist them. Because I think most people really would actually like to own their own property.
Yes.
But of course, the danger is that if you raise social housing rents to commercial levels, how on earth is a young couple then going to be able to afford to save a deposit to move on? And what you want to do really is those that want to and those that can, encourage them to move on, improve the quality of their own life, and thus release social housing for those people who really need social housing and need help or who are on low incomes.
Yep.
And that's really what we need to do, is care in the community, really.
I'm interested that when I ask you about Liberal Vannin policies, you talk about their policies and them. It questions how closely you affiliate yourself to the party.
I affiliate myself quite closely. I mean, let's face it, no party, you can't agree with all of the policies in the party. There's no such party unless it happens to be your own, of course.
So how much freedom do you have in terms of making your own decisions?
In the party, I mean, my position is quite clear. We are free thinkers. If we disagree with something, we can, and we will. And because that actually is what democracy is all about.
So if you were elected and there was a matter that was debated in Tynwald that you didn't agree with the party line, you would be able to take your own stance on that?
I'm able to take my own stance, yes. And you've got to, because if you sell yourself down line, in the end, you've got to live with yourself. And the overall policy of Liberal Vannin, I'm quite happy with. I think that they've got some very good points. They've got a terrific skill set of people within the party who cover all aspects of business, banking and accounting. Obviously, my skills do lie elsewhere, and I can contribute handsomely, I believe, anyway. I wouldn't be doing this.
Well, would it not be better for a more financially competent person, do you think, to stand, given that Liberal Vannin does put the economy at the forefront of its campaign?
No, I don't, because as a candidate, I've been involved in costings and budgeting, both in the private sector and at local authority level, so I know how to budget. I know exactly how not to waste money, which we've seen this government just throw it. I mean, it's like running a boat. They're just throwing £50 notes in the air all the time. Well, sooner or later, those are going to be duds. In fact, they're probably dud now.
Theo Fleurbye, is it the right time for party politics in the Isle of Man?
No, the Isle of Man is way too small for party politics. I don't believe in that.
Well, it's not actually true, because it works in even smaller jurisdictions like Gibraltar.
Yeah, but the way we work in the Isle of Man, if you're looking at 24 MHKs, I don't really think that party politics will actually be better than the system we have now.
I do disagree there, because let's face it, the council of ministers are a party. It's one for all and all for one. They vote on block.
Yeah, but if you just said that if need be, if you do get chosen as an MHK for the Liberal Van Den Party, that if you need to decide, make decisions, vote on issues that are going against the party line, but are in line with your conviction, that you would actually deviate from the party line. So what's the purpose of having a party behind you then?
Well, isn't that exactly what democracy is about? It's the ability to
be
able...
So why stand for a party then?
Because having examined their policies, I'm quite happy that 99% of their policies are okay.
If some of the issues of your party might not be the issues important to your constituents in Douglas North.
I know, but you're then confusing constituency matters with national matters. I mean, the constituency matter in Douglas North is completely different to the constituent Ayr, which is a rural area.
Exactly. So how would you...
You take a completely different line.
You have to stick with the party line.
The Liberal Van Den has a national party, but when you're dealing with your constituents, you've got to address the needs of your constituents.
Even if they go against your party line?
Well, I can't honestly see that there are any issues with Liberal Van Den's policies that would go against what needs to be done in Douglas North or indeed any other constituency.
Bill Henderson, in your manifesto, you criticise the ministerial block vote, saying it promotes an autocratic process that dictates it should not be challenged or questioned.
Yes, absolutely does.
Have you considered joining Liberal Van Den then as a way of countering that?
I've worked as an independent since I was elected, which is exactly what my constituents want me to do. And sometimes, Beth, when I've put some debates to Tynwald, certainly with regards to, say, road safety issues, for instance, for North Douglas, I've had the backing of my colleague, obviously, but it's had a major result, and we've been able to move forward and get some effective road safety measures put in, which has proved that we can actually break the block vote if you can debate yourself articulately enough and put your case forward well enough and put the facts and the information out for the backbench members.
John Horton?
Yes, it's just a point that my colleague Mr Henderson has mentioned there, and he's very, very right about breaking the block vote. There's a constitutional issue here. Of course, as we know, when people have been elected to the House of Keys, they've been elected to Parliament. Parliament sits together as Tynwald and appoints the Chief Minister. That's democratic. But then when the Chief Minister picks his team, and this team that he wants to mould around his ideas and ambitions, etc., of course, that's when the democracy disappears. And that's the issue, because those people, those ministers, really, I feel, should be chosen also by Tynwald. If they can't get on, they can be removed and replaced, but that would be much more democratic.
So that's a policy of yours for this manifesto, is it?
And it always has, and it's the trouble is, it would have to be voted through Tynwald, and you'd lose out on the block vote.
And finally on this, Peter Hill.
Well, I think this demonstrates how wrong the situation is, because if you equate the parliamentary system here to that lot across the water, it would be like the Conservatives, Labour and Liberals saying, vote for me, and when we're elected, we'll tell you what we're going to do. No one would vote, and that's exactly what you've got here. You don't even know now who wants to stand as Chief Minister. You don't know what his policies are.
In the past election, that's actually stood against people when they have been open and honest about their intentions to stand.
Well, then maybe that is a perception that needs to change, because if you actually... But at the moment, that's what happened, because the situation isn't that the Chief Minister perhaps is popularly elected, that if it was the policy, you will declare your policies beforehand, and it is an individual choice. If you want to be Chief Minister, you've got to say so. And if you don't say so by midnight on Tuesday or something or other, you won't be Chief Minister. Then you know exactly who the candidates are and you know what they stand for.
That's where the weakness is.
Well, let's just move on to another issue. And once again, one of the buzz phrases for this election is open and transparent government. The Liberal Van Den Party cites a steam packet report as a poor example of that in the last administration. You were chairman of the Office of Fair Trading, Bill Henderson. Are you going to take responsibility for that?
The issue with the steam packet report is quite straightforward, as reported by Isle of Man newspapers. There's ongoing issues at the minute, and people who know and have come to know me know that I can be trusted, and that there's unresolved matters underway at the minute, that if I say too much at the minute, I will prejudice the ongoing matters, and in the very near future, I will be in a position to be completely... we can may be in a position to publish that report where people can actually see it. At the minute, as I say, there's ongoing issues, and I don't want to prejudice those. And I can also reassure the public there has not been a waste of taxpayers' money, as has been reported. And in fact, the Office of Fair Trading is working very hard behind the scenes as we speak at the minute. There are third parties involved here, as people are well aware, so that needs to be taken cognizance of too. Also, there was a subcommittee who undertook the work of that, which I was disengaged from completely because of my conflict of interest prior to the investigation.
Peter Hill?
Well, I think this whole thing's been very badly handled, and maybe it's been unfairly to the detriment of Bill. I don't know. But the fact remains is that the last government we had under Mr Brown was definitely the most secretive government we've had, and they do withhold information. And one of the topics that has been frequently mentioned by candidates is local government reform. I know for a fact that the Chief Minister is sitting on a report that was given to him more than 4 months ago that is to do with local government. Am I to understand that if this report had been put into the public domain before this election, it could have altered the whole face of Tynwald at this election? And I think it's appalling. We've been asking for this report and we're simply being refused, and it's not acceptable.
But at any point, any member of Tynwald could come forward with a private member's bill, and as somebody did not too long before the end of the dissolution of Tynwald, and say, right, let's bring about local government reform. If that's supported by everybody else, then it would happen.
Yes, no, but this report was actually completed, as I understand, December and January of this year. It was given to the Chief Minister at his request. Now, local government reform, it's quite a hot potato. It's been on the agenda for decades, really. Well, surely now, with the economic situation, isn't it now the time to deal with this? That what we need to be is open and transparent. We need to put it out there so we know what's on the table.
Council ministers dipped out on a golden opportunity a couple of years ago, which I was actually supportive of, where just a similar exercise was being undertaken. And unfortunately, because some local authorities couldn't agree to it, but we had a GARF initiative to amalgamate several, because other local authorities weren't agreeable, the ministers went against that, whereas, in my opinion, they should have allowed that to happen and let the situation evolve across the island, where we had a great chance.
Just still thinking about openness and transparency, Theo Fleurby, is there a need to accept that when it comes to information, it isn't always in the Isle of Man's best interest to make everything public? In some cases, that would put us on the back foot.
Well, I think we're one of the few nations in the Western world without a policy of open politics, a Freedom of Information Act. I think we're lagging dramatically behind.
John Horton?
The difficulty, of course, when you're dealing with matters international, such as dealing with the VAT sharing agreement and other issues on taxation going into Europe, as you rightly said yourself, Beth, if you make clear your policies in Tynwald and have them approved before you go out then and sell them, you are on the back foot. You've given people notification of the cards and no cards up your sleeve. That has not got to be the right way. That's when you have to trust in the integrity of certain senior players in the political level to deal with that. Even if there were meetings and presentations with members, if you like, in camera, in order that the members were quite satisfied with the way things should be moved forward.
But if it works in other countries, why can't it work here? Obviously, there's rules and regulations attached to a Freedom of Information Act, yeah. So it should be possible to
I think we're hanging our hat too much on the Freedom of Information Act. I think if you examine the Isle of Man system at an overview, in fact, some of the government is more open and transparent than many other places in the world.
Right, we're approaching the end of the programme now. Yes. I just want to ask you all, if you are elected, how many of you would support and actively pursue making contributions to your own pensions? Have we got a show of hands?
It's already
all hands in the air. Let's finish, as we started then, by hearing from each candidate in turn as they very briefly outline why they deserve your vote. First, Theo Fleurby.
Yeah, I would like to ask the people in Douglas North to vote for me. Considering the economical situation that we're in and the financial situation that we're confronted with, which we'll feel in the next few years, it will start to bite the next year. I'll bring with me 30 years of international experience of successfully running businesses through good and bad times. I'll bring ideas and a can-do attitude to the House of Keys.
Bill Henderson.
I was born and bred in North Douglas, grew up there, know the issues, know the constituents personally. I act fearlessly, I have a proven track record, and I intend, if re-elected, to act without fear or favour again.
Peter Hill.
Well, I mean, as Lawrence Clark, anybody there will know that if I say I will do something, I will. And I've been more than happy to do that in Douglas North. And I know that I can respond to their needs as part of the Liberal Vanning Party.
And finally, John Horton.
With my constituent support, I have the drive and the ambition, the proven experience, in order to drive matters forward in the way that I have a track record of doing, in order to work forward with members who are elected to gain the best vital deal for the Isle of Man.
Well, thank you to all the candidates from North Douglas, Theo Flurby, Bell Henderson,
Thanks
Peter Hill,
and
John Horton. That does bring us to the end of the programme. It's going to be available on Manx Radio's Listen Again. If you'd like any more details about the election, you can visit our dedicated website. That's election.manxradio.com. Today's programme was produced by Alex Brinley and Catherine Nicol. Roger Watterson returns on Friday with the candidates from Douglas South. I'll be back on Monday with those from Douglas West. Until then, goodbye.